the J Talk Podcast.
よしよしよしよしよし。森重岡崎
本田本田本田本田。
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell, and on this week's episode, three great guests join me to run through all of the games in J1 Match Day 5. Angus McLeod of JapanFooty.com took the bulk of the load on his shoulders as we covered 7 of the 9 games. Then I met up with Scott McIntyre of SBS Television in Australia and theworldgame.sbs.com.au in a top-secret location in Yokohama to discuss Sendai's draw with Kofu and Graham Arnold's rocky start in charge of Vegalta, before Barry Valder of the excellent S-Pulse UK Ultras blog joined me to chat about the clash between our respective clubs, Shimizu and FC Tokyo. At the end of the episode, I run through the fixtures this midweek and weekend for top flight clubs and bring you up to date on the key results from J2 and J3. The J-Talk podcast starts now. For the majority of our look at J1 Match Day 5, I've been joined by Angus McLeod from JapanFooty.com. Angus, how are you?
I'm very well, Ben. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good to have you back on for the first time this season since the game started. Of course, you're on the J1 transfer special with Stuart Smith, and then you ducked off over to Europe for a while. How was your trip?
It was really good. It was good to see friends and family back home and meet up with one or two people. Had a good time in Scotland, and I also made a trip over to Croatia and Bosnia, which was, it's always interesting to go and see new places. But, it's good to be back.
All right. And, so you've been getting back into the swing of things with the J-League, and how are things going on the website?
Very well. I've got quite a few pieces up in over the last couple of weeks. I've taken a little bit of a different slant on things this year. The first couple of years I was running the site, I was focusing more on kind of reporting, match roundups, that kind of thing. This year, personally, I'm trying to do a bit more sort of opinion pieces, just to challenge myself. And I've also started a new feature where each month I'm going to be naming my team of the month. So the team for March is already up there. If anyone wants to have a look, it's at japanfooty.com. And also there are a number of other articles by various other authors on different aspects and levels of Japanese football.
Yes, and I dare say some of the players from your first team of the month will be featured as we work through 7 of the 9 games from match day 5. Let's start then at the Nissan Stadium in Yokohama. It was third hosting first coming into the match day, Yokohama hosting Kashima, and the leaders, Antlers, moved 2 points clear at the top of the table with a 3-1 win. Yokohama took the lead towards the end of the first half with a Yuzo Kurihara header from Shunsuke Nakamura's corner. But Kashima turned the game on its head in the second half, Angus scoring 3 very impressive goals.
Yeah, they were all very impressive goals. And, I'm really excited about this Antlers side. I think I said in the transfer podcast that we did earlier in the year that Antlers was one of the teams that I was most looking forward to seeing because of some of the young, exciting talents they've got coming through there, like Sho Madoy, Gaku Shibasaki, who is excellent at the weekend. And, I'm really impressed with the way Toninho Cerezo has handled things since losing Yuya Osako, who was by far his best player in the transfer window. But I do think, from a Mariners perspective, it was extremely disappointing, some of the defending, particularly Yuji Nakazawa. He seemed to be almost at fault for all 3 of the goals to some extent. The first one, Sho Madoy just left him for dead and really exposed his lack of pace as he was bearing down on goal. The second goal, he was kind of ball watching and Nozawa slipped in behind him. And it was kind of similar for the third goal with Shibasaki, who ran in front of him, and Nakazawa tried to sort of claim that he was offside, but he was definitely onside, as the replay showed. So yeah, it was a very disappointing defending from Marinos. But then again, you know, we mentioned about the age issue with Marinos. Many of the players are up in their 30s, and you do wonder with their ACL participation whether, you know, maybe it's just a case of tired legs. It has been quite a difficult and busy schedule for Marinos this month.
Most definitely, yeah. So you mentioned the goals briefly there. So yeah, Sean Madoy scored Kashima's first in the 54th minute, finishing off a sweeping team move from back to front, taking Yukitoshi Ito's through ball and dribbling between Kurihara and Nakazawa before finishing smartly. It was still 1-1 with just 10 minutes to go, but then Antler scored twice in the last 10 minutes. Shibasaki, who you mentioned, Angus, had time to pick a pass from 30 yards out and found Nozawa's intelligent run, yeah, as you said, in behind Nakazawa with the Yokohama defensive line all at sea. And then with 3 minutes to go, young Brazilian Caio dribbled through the middle and played the ball out to Gaku Shibasaki, who finished neatly first time with his left foot. So, yeah, Kashima 2 points clear at the top, as I mentioned. Yokohama slipped a little down to fifth. And it's been a rough week and a half or so for Yokohama, Angus. As you mentioned, with the ACL commitments, they've now lost two on the spin in the league, and of course they lost in Melbourne to Melbourne Victory in the ACL the week before last. The return game is this midweek for Yokohama, so that game might have already been played by the time you listen to this podcast. But Yokohama desperately need a win against Melbourne to stand a chance of progressing through the group stage in the ACL. But yeah, Kashima, good value for their lead at the top after five games. The team in second is still Cerezo Osaka, but they drew a blank at home against Niigata, Angus. A bit of a damp squib, this, it looked on the highlights, ultimately finishing 0-0.
Yeah, I actually watched this one in its entirety on the TV live. Yeah, 0-0. It wasn't the most exciting of games, but there were quite a few moments where it did look like they were going to open their accounts. But both keepers were on form. Kim, the Cerezo goalkeeper, had a number of decent saves, including a spectacular one from Kengo Kawamata's diving header, which certainly looked goal-bound. Also, something that wasn't shown in the highlights, there were a couple of long shots from Leo Silva and Hideya Okamoto, which looked very dangerous indeed. And, you know, I mentioned both keepers were great. Well, you know, I have to kind of hold my hands up and say, yeah, I was very impressed by Alberix's Tatsuya Morita. He made a great save early on from a ferocious low shot from Yuichiro Kakitani. To deny Cerezo. I mean, Tatsuya Morita, he came from Katare Toyama last season, and I'd seen him a number of times at Toyama, and you know, he was abysmal on each occasion, but he you know, he did a decent job. I felt that Alberix kind of had the upper hand, to be honest, and it was a bit disappointing to see Forlan and Kakitani kept so quiet. You know, Forlan perhaps hasn't quite lived up to his expectations so far in the opening month of the J-League season. I was very surprised to see on my Twitter feed someone saying that he's not actually traveling for the ACL match in Thailand.
That's right, yeah.
Because of fatigue, which is it's quite concerning because, you know, as I say, the season's only a month old.
Indeed, yeah, that was a little bit of a head scratcher, but yeah, I'm not sure what they're going to gain from that. They obviously feel confident of their chances over in Thailand and feel that they're able to rest him, even though he's still betting himself into the team, isn't he? So yeah, it was interesting at the full time whistle to look over the stats and see that Niigata actually outshot Cerezo, and I can't imagine there'll be too many more times this season where that happens. Niigata finishing with 13 shots and Cerezo 8. So, yeah, well, I praised Cerezo to the hilt with Alan Gibson last week Angus, but they've obviously hit a little blip in the road here. But, yeah, an ACL game to come this week in Thailand, of course, before they visit Kashiwa this weekend, and the Osaka Derby against Gamba looming on the horizon in match day 7. The defending champions are level with Cerezo in second place on 10 points. Hiroshima won 3-1 at home over Tokushima. And yes, Tokushima scored a goal. The Vortex has been defeated, repelled, whatever. But it took until they were 3-0 down in this game, Angus, for them to finally register their first J1 goal at the fifth attempt.
Yeah, well, it's great to see them finally get off the mark, because it's been a pretty horrible baptism for them in the top flight, their first ever year in J1. You do wonder if it will give them confidence going into the next few games. I know Steve Baum wrote a piece on them, my site in his relegationist column, mm-hmm. where he said that it seemed like everything was just a few seconds too slow, a split second slower than the opposition when he was watching them. And I tend to agree. I watched Vortis playing against Yokohama F. Marinos a couple of weeks ago, and that's exactly how it felt. They just aren't quite at the same level for me. But in this game, they did look a little bit dangerous. I mean, Takuto Hayashi did have to make a couple of good saves in the Sanfrecce goal. It is concerning with Fortis that a lot of the goals conceded are coming from set pieces. I mean, certainly when I watched them against Marinos, I think there were two of the three goals came from set pieces. I think that one was from a corner, another came from a Nakamura free kick. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, all three goals in this match against Sanfrecce came from set pieces, two free kicks and a corner. So that's a worry for Vortis. But perhaps you should also be looking at that and being a little bit worried if you're a Sanfrecce fan. I mean, you shouldn't really have to be relying on set pieces to break down what certainly appears to be the weakest and worst team in the J1.
Yeah, it took until the 44th minute for Hiroshima to get onto the scoreboard, and it was that man Tsukasa Shiotani again firing in a superb free kick for his third goal of the season. Then 4 minutes after the restart, Yojiro Takahagi's ball was brilliantly headed in by Naoki Ishihara. Shiotani then rolled a free kick into the path of Gakuto Notsuda, and he lashed home in the 66th minute before Tokushima. Yes, they finally broke their duck 6 minutes after that, when Junya Osaki's cross was deflected in the box, and a reflex header from Hiroyuki Takasaki beat Takuto Hayashi in the Hiroshima net. And you mentioned Hayashi's saves, Angus. One of them was absolutely phenomenal to deny Takasaki his second goal not long after. Takasaki's header from about 6 yards out, brilliantly kept out down low by Hayashi. So Vortis still without a point after 5 games, and they've conceded 15 goals, scoring just the one. Next to the late kickoff down in Kyushu on Saturday night, and the host Sagan Tosu moved up to fourth in the table with a 2-0 win over Gamba Osaka. The match was played in torrential rain for most of it, and ultimately Tosu claiming the win with the 2 goals in the last 20 minutes, Angus, and it's good to see Tosu doing well back up in the top half of the table.
Yeah, it is, especially because they're the only Kyushu side in the top flight this year. It's great to see that they've managed to rediscover the form that made them so exciting to watch in 2012. They have been a little bit up and down, it seems, from the results. I mean, the opening day, they thrashed Vortis 5-0. They beat Urawa away, which was a fantastic result. Then there's the heavy loss at home to Kashima, the 3-0 loss. But I actually watched that game, and it wasn't as one-sided as the scoreline suggests. I'm kind of interested to see how they progress as the season goes on. I mean, before the season kicked off, I wasn't really sure what to expect of them, whether they could continue the good form from the latter half of last season, and perhaps do a bit of an Omiyale Adesia to a lesser extent, or if they would just crumble away. But it seems like they've managed to sort of steady the ship. And, you know, the win against Gamba was a great result in pretty horrible conditions.
Mm.
But, yeah, and also it's great to see Toyoda doing so well. He's a player that I really like, although I know that he's not everybody's cup of tea. You know, I just wonder if he can continue his fine scoring form, whether or not he might be able to squeeze his way onto the plane to Brazil this summer.
Yeah, I think, at the moment, it looks to me, Angus, that it's probably a two-way fight for one spot as the backup striker between him and Masato Kudo. Is that the way you see it, or do you still think that Kawamata might be able to work his way in?
I would love to see Kawamata go, but I don't think Zaccheroni will pick him unless he has a ridiculous vein of scoring form that makes it impossible to ignore. For me, you know, if I look at Zaccheroni's selections going all the way back to when he first came into the job, it seems that he really likes to have a big, burly striker. And Toyoda fits that bill. You know, before there was Maeda and also Mike Havner. So I've got a feeling that one of those, you know, maybe Maeda's chance has gone with him being relegated, but I've got a feeling that either him or Havner will go to Brazil.
Or him meaning Toyoda?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I really don't know.
So, yeah, the two goals for Tosu coming in the last 20 minutes, as I mentioned, Toyoda got them going in the 72nd minute when he was somehow left unattended by three Gamba defenders to head in Ryuhei Niwa's deep cross from the right. And then in the 82nd minute, Kota Mizunuma crossed from the right again, and it was turned in superbly by Korean midfielder Kim Min-woo. So, yeah, Tosu up to fourth, as I mentioned. Gamba slipped a little down to 14th in the table. Moving out of chronological order and going back to the one game played at last Friday night, Kawasaki moved into the top half of the table up to ninth with their second straight win, 1-0 at home over Nagoya. Yoshito Okubo scored the only goal of the game in the 68th minute, finishing off a lovely pass in the box from Kengo Nakamura. Angus, you watched this one as well, and you said it wasn't the easiest game to watch.
You know, with these two sides, you kind of, when they come together, you always kind of feel that it's going to be a bit of a difficult watch. Frontale, when they're at their best, they can play some beautiful, slick passing football. But they also have a really gnarly side to them. You know, Okubo is kind of the epitome of what I'm talking about there. I mean, he's a great player. He's got fantastic footwork, great passing, and a ferocious shot on him. But he's got this other side to him, where he's quite often going down, diving, complaining to the referee, silly little fouls. And, you know, that was evident in this game quite a lot from not just him, but a number of Frontale's players. And also from Nagoya, I kind of feel, at least from the Dragan Stojkovic era, that was certainly quite prevalent with them. But, you know, there were some signs, you know, Nishino does seem to be slowly moulding the team in his own shape, but there's still a bit of a hangover from the Stojkovic era, I feel, with that kind of needless sort of niggly little physical things creeping into the game. But, it wasn't anything to write home about. Steve Baum on Twitter described it as a choppy game, and I think that's a good adjective to choose to describe it. It wasn't particularly exciting to watch. It lacked fluency. I think Frontale, yeah, overall they deserved the 3 points just about, but, you know, it's not, not a game that will live long in the memory, unless you're a Frontale fan, of course, because of course, Yoshito Okubo netted the 1,000th J-League goal. So you might end up wearing one of those commemorative t-shirts. But, nothing to write home about.
All right. Well, just unfortunate for me as an FC Tokyo supporter that Kawasaki were in such lethal form the weekend before, obviously thrashing Tokyo 4-0 and then having a slightly harder job to squeeze past Nagoya last Friday night. But that they did, and they moved into the top half of the table, as did Vissel Kobe, who moved all the way up to seventh with a 3-1 home win over Urawa. And they had to come from behind to do it. Reds took the lead in the 35th minute when Tsukasa Umesaki volleyed home Tomoya Ugaijin's cross from the left. But from there, it was the Pedro Jr. show. On the hour mark, he robbed Ryota Moriwaki on the Kobe left, dribbled into the box and finished smartly. And then he was the beneficiary of a Ryota Morioka pass after Morioka had robbed Keita Suzuki, who was dawdling on the ball on the edge of his own box, with the Reds pushing for an equalizer in the second half stoppage time. Kobe broke and Marquinhos finished off a solo break with a lovely finish from the edge of the box in the 91st minute. So a character building win, I think we could call this for Kobe, Angus. And as I said, up into the top half, a very big scalp to take in that of Reds.
Yeah, it is. I haven't seen a great deal of either of these two teams so far in the season, but I was very surprised by this result. You know, Vissel being a newly promoted team and Reds being a contender for much of last year, you'd have to say that this is a shock result, I feel. But if you were a Reds fan, I'd be pretty angry with this display. I mean, the first goal of Pedro Jr.'s, yeah, it's a great finish from him, but, you know, he pretty much bulldozes Moriwaki into the ground to get the ball off him. I'm convinced that that's a foul. I can't understand why the referee hasn't given it in Red's favour. Keita Suzuki, yeah, trying to be Zidane in his own box, right. Well, around his own box. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking, trying to dribble around two or three Vissel players instead of just lumping it forward. When you get into trouble, it seems the smart thing to do. And the last goal was particularly humiliating, I thought. I mean, yeah, okay, Marquinhos has a couple of yards head start on the defenders, but there's no way a 40-year-old should be leaving defenders for dead, especially when he's running with the ball at his feet, you know, over that distance. So, yeah, I'd be pretty furious with that performance if I was a Reds fan. But, yeah, it's been a very encouraging start for Vissel Kobe. And they're looking pretty good. Before the season started, I wasn't really sure how Vissel or Gamba would do, but based on the opening few weeks, it wouldn't be that surprising if Vissel finished above their Kansai neighbours in the table.
Yeah, definitely looking at a possibility at the moment. Kobe with just the one loss so far, of course, away at Nagoya last week. Okay, Angus, so the last game that we'll cover, keeping in mind that Scott and Barry are coming up shortly, is the two-all draw between Kashiwa and Omiya. And early doors, Angus, we saw a candidate, and I don't know if anyone is going to be able to top this, for a miss of the season from Leandro. Absolutely astonishing to put the ball over from all of 4 yards out with the goal gaping.
Yeah, it was a horrible miss, and he won't want to be reminded of that one. I mean, Leandro, he came to Reysol with a huge reputation. We all know what he's capable of from his time with Gamba, but hasn't really clicked for him in the opening few weeks of the season at Reysol. Okay, he got a goal against Fortis, but I mean, really, how could he miss that? I mean, you would have bet your house on him scoring there. But Wataru Hashimoto showed him how it was done just a short while after, with a very similar chance he put into the Omiya net to open the scoring. So Interesting stat about Hashimoto. He's had 3 shots this season and he's scored 3 goals.
Right.
So maybe he should be up front. And it's interesting, Shohei Takahashi, who is also on the score sheet for Omiya in this game, 3 shots, 3 goals. So it's very interesting. In the first month of the J-League, it seems to be defenders that are getting on the score sheets. I mean, we've already mentioned Sanfrecce's Tsukasa Shiotani has been in excellent scoring form. So it's kind of interesting and ironic that these are the guys that are getting the goals. But yeah, I thought it was very concerning from an Omiya point of view. Of course, they later went 2-0 down with Masato Kudo getting a tap-in. Very concerning from an Omiya point of view, because a lot of their chances and all of the chances that we've mentioned so far here came from the left-back area, which seems to be a particular weakness for Omiya. They seemed continually exposed throughout the game here. And you know, after I checked up Hokuto Nakamura, it's your friend who was playing in the left back role.
Indeed.
The former Tokyo man.
Yeah.
But I had a look at the heat maps of the Omiya players, and I was quite surprised to find that Shohei Takahashi, who was playing at centre back, his heat map actually showed he was spending more time on the ball in the left back position than Nakamura, and he's been spending more time on the ball in the left back position throughout the season than the player who's been occupying that left-back spot, whether it's been Nakamura or Murakami.
Right.
So that perhaps tells you something. Perhaps they need to have a look at that area and, you know, tighten up there, or perhaps maybe shuffle the personnel a bit more. You know, Karu Takayama was Nakamura's opponent. He is a very fast player. I mentioned him a couple of times on the pod over the past year or so. He's a very exciting player and definitely one to watch on the right wing. But, you know, I think overall, from an Omiya perspective, I think although they didn't really produce much in the way of chances throughout the 90 minutes, it was great to see the way that they battled back. And particularly with Takahashi, I mean, you got both of the goals, and it was just the manner, the sort of ferocity with which he made sure that first goal of Omiya's went into the net. You know, that was great to see that kind of intensity about the team. It was an intensity that was sorely lacking in the latter half of last season. But yeah, they're looking a much improved side.
Yeah, most definitely. And as you mentioned, yeah, the two Omiya goals coming very late on in the 83rd and the 85th minute are both scored by Shohei Takahashi. And yeah, they're well, hopefully picking up a reputation as being street fighters here, I think, Angus, because of course they came from behind so late on against Kawasaki 3 games ago. So yeah, it's good to see that that fighting spirit perhaps has returned to the Omiya squad. And you mentioned Takayama. I'm glad you did, because I was going to bring him up as well. He was the man responsible for both of Kashiwa's goals, and indeed he would have had another assist if Leandro had have converted that that golden chance so early on. So Takayama's had a very positive effect since his move from Shonan Bellmare, and yeah, that's it's great to see him settling in so well so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, a great credit to Reysol, because I know that they had stiff competition for his signature over the winter months. So it's great to see him making an impact there.
All right, then. So that's the first 7 games of the match day reviewed. Scott and Barry still to come. But for now, Angus, thanks very much for your time again this week, and we'll be sure to speak soon.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
Next to the game up in Sendai last Saturday afternoon, and joining me to discuss it on location in a hotel in Yokohama is Scott McIntyre. Scott, how are you?
Good, Ben. Good to see you again.
You as well. Yeah, we can't get rid of you. You're back.
Yeah, keep hanging around. Although I've learned my lesson not to come ever again in the springtime. This hay fever is a nasty thing.
Well, you're here for the cherry blossoms, but yeah, the hay fever kind of trumps that, I think.
Correct.
So why are we sat in a hotel in Yokohama?
We're actually in the Melbourne Victory Hotel ahead of their ACL match with Yokohama tomorrow night. We've just had a bit of a chat with Kevin Muscat. Looking forward to that game as well, because it's been a great run for the Aussie clubs in the last couple of match days. So, yeah, be interesting to see how they go against a stronger Yokohama and Kawasaki against Wanderers. Of course, those results will probably be known by the time most people are listening to this.
Indeed.
So you should give a prediction and look like a Nostradamus or something.
I think there'll be two home wins for the Japanese clubs.
All right.
Perhaps 2-0 in both.
There you go.
What, were you going to stick your neck on the line as well?
Oh, I think Kawasaki could score 4 or 5, but...
Okay.
But I've been known to to build them up before.
True, true. Well, yeah, great to speak to Kevin Muscat. He's a lovely, lovely gentleman. You spent some time up in Sendai in the past week to speak to Graham Arnold, another very nice guy. How are things going for him up there? Obviously, a difficult start to the season for Sendai, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I think it was probably a lot harder, and he admits that as well, than he expected it would be. You know, adapting to the culture, it takes players a long time to adapt to things, let alone a coach who's coming in to a culture, although he played at Hiroshima, that, you know, is still a little bit confusing in some ways. Obviously, the language barrier is there as well. And a guy like Arnie is a guy that's really big on the man management side of things. So I think he's found it a little bit difficult in some way to try and, you know, I mean, if you look at the club where he was with the Mariners, it was a club that was very tight. The players were very close. So, you know, there'd be barbecues at people's houses and all this kind of stuff. And that kind of doesn't really work up there. So I think he's finding problems in that regard. I mean, there's simple problems that other J-League clubs don't experience. Last week, it snowed heavily up in Sendai, and I saw some of the videos he took before training one day. They had to spend half an hour, and they got volunteers in from all around the place shoveling snow off the pitch just to have a patch of surface that's usable. So it's all these little kind of things that present unique problems. The squad at Sendai is an older one. He knew that, but perhaps the depth of it, maybe he didn't quite understand, and the playing pool that they've got is probably nowhere near as deep as other clubs as well. So I think really at Sendai, regardless of who had to come in, it was going to be a process this year of regenerating, not just this year, in the next couple of years, regenerating the squad, perhaps getting some younger players in. So he's trying to do this, and he's trying to change the way that the team plays at the same time. It's a big challenge, and the results haven't been great, but in terms of the performances, I've seen outside of the Nabisco loss and the Omiya loss, the two games where they really got hammered, I've seen the other games and they've been not dominant, but certainly for large parts of those games, they've been able to control the tempo, to control the rhythm. They've kept possession very well, certainly in the middle third of the field. Defensively, the squad, if you look at the balance of the squad, I think there's something like 7 or 8 defenders and 20 midfielders. I mean, the whole thing is lopsided. So he's been trying to balance that. As a result, the depth is not as good. He had to play a young left fullback, threw him in for the first couple of games, his first J-League games. Of course, there's been the situation well documented with the goalkeeper as well. But in terms of where their strength lies in the middle of the field, they've been impressive. They've looked pretty good in transition and certainly in the middle third of the field. But there's probably not as many chances created as they would have liked, but defensively they've looked generally pretty solid. So there's certainly, you can see the things that they've been trying to work on is coming through. The other thing is the other Aussie guys at the club as well. I mean, Andrew Clark, a very highly regarded physical conditioner, is there now, and we saw some comments from Barcelona at the weekend when Guardiola was there, and he said one of the real keys for the success that Barca had was the fact that they managed to keep players fit and on the pitch. And if you can do that, I think Sendai now have only got 1 or 2 players that aren't available, and it kind of stacks up favourably. So already you see the good work that Arnie and his team are doing in terms of giving the team every chance for success.
So in match day 5, Kofu were the visitors. Sendai were looking for their first victory of the season in all competitions. They took the lead in the 37th minute through midfielder Makoto Kakuda. He headed in Ryang Yonggi's cross from the left. And although they were outshot for over the 90 minutes, Scott, they seemed to be holding out fairly well until a bit of a scrambled effort from Kofu 14 minutes from time led to the equaliser for defender Naoaki Aoyama.
Yeah, I mean, the shot count, I think it read 9-4 or something or other, and
that's right,
most of those came in the second half, but that didn't tell you how many shots were on target, because I think there was only a couple. The keeper had to make one save where he tipped the ball onto the post and kept it out. But and then the goal itself, like you said, a scrambled effort, unfortunately come off Kakuta, a deflection, right, which if that doesn't happen, it's another day. But it seems to be now almost the groove that they're in. I mean, they went on that long run of outs at the end of last season. It's continued now, and the morale in the squad is obviously not what it could be, and simple things like that, you take a deflected touch here or there, and you know, someone's scored a goal, as they have in the first couple of matches, from distance, you know, a belter, and just little things add up to a lack of confidence. You saw almost the relief when Kakuta's goal went in. The players ran over and celebrated as one in the corner, and there was a sense going forward that they weren't really troubled at all after that. I mean, there were so few moments. I know it said 9 shots, but a lot of those were just wild kind of efforts. It probably doesn't tell the full story. And the other thing, again, you don't want to get into complaints too much, but I was standing right behind the goal and actually shot the Wilson non-penalty.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't given, and I showed it to a couple of the players afterwards, and they couldn't believe it either. I mean, it was... it was black and white. It was a penalty every day of the week. And unfortunately, it's a referee, I understand, was having his first actual J-League match at the weekend. So, you know, maybe he was a bit gun-shy in terms of not wanting to give a decision that may have got him in trouble, something other. But there's little moments like that, because the goal that Kofu scored came a minute or 2 minutes up. It went up the other end, and then the goal came. So it just seems a lot of little things are conspiring against the side at the moment. But you know, I saw quite a few of their sessions, and the sessions are sharp. The work that's being done is good. The players are starting to understand the way that Arnie wants them to play, and that work will pay off. As long as the club is patient, and as long as the players are patient enough to see that it is the right way going forward.
All right, so as well as Arnold, of course, a couple of new arrivals, Michael McGlinchey, the New Zealand midfielder, and the Australian goalkeeper, Danny Vukovic. Were you able to catch up with both of those guys, and how's their mood through this difficult start to the season? I know Vukovic hasn't featured yet, but, how were those two guys getting on?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously difficult for everybody, especially for Mike McGlinchey. When he first came to the club, he was the only... outside of Wilson, the only foreign player in the dressing room. Not many of the boys speak much English, so it was, as you could imagine, a daunting environment to go in, and the fact that because it was so cold, they were away for such a long time with the pre-season preparations. But he's diligently studying Japanese. I saw he's doing quite
well.
Great. So, and, you know, he's slowly starting to fit into the team dynamic. I think it's probably fair to say that we haven't seen the best that he can offer on the pitch so far. He got through 60-65 minutes in the game against Corfu. Of course, he's had a tough schedule as well, with the New Zealand having to play the international match in between everything else. But he's settling in. His versatility is a strength for Sendai, the fact that he can cover two or three different positions. Danny just played the one Nabisco Cup game. I think he'll start against FC Tokyo on Wednesday as well. And then, you know, he's right in the frame, you'd think, for a first-team chance as well. I think he came maybe carrying a few extra kilos when he arrived. So he's trimmed down. He's looking sharp. He had a little bit of a niggle last week in training as well. But if he starts, he's the kind of guy that can save games for them. He's a fantastic shot stopper, and you know, maybe they need that.
So just one more on Arnold before we finish up. I mean, how is his mood overall? I mean, he's obviously quite a cool, calm and collected gentleman. I'm sure he's not panicking or anything at the way things are going, but I guess he must... Did you get the sense he was a little bit worried, concerned about the slow start?
No, I mean, I asked him directly, and he knows that, you know, it's a results game and the results have to come at some point, but he also knows, in consultation with the club, the project that they're taking together is one that is going to be a lengthy one, because it is an old squad with an imbalance in positions and so on. So the club has to be patient, the supporters have to be patient. It's hard for the supporters, because they've been used to success under Tegu Mori, but now the cycle of the club, as it does everywhere, has come to an end, and it has to start again. It's going to be painful for 6 months, you know. Understand there might be a little bit of movement around players and so on later in the year in June, but he said he's already felt that, you know, the challenge he's had is he's grown and developed. He's learning so much. There was one story he told me that when they were in the preseason camp, one night he got a knock on his hotel door, and he came in. There was a whole trolley full of a beer and wine and all sorts of things delivered to his room. Said, what's this all about? This is not mine. He said, no, it's yours. And then a knock on the door came from a couple of the staff a little bit later, and they sat down and they said, boss, you haven't been drinking with us so far. We thought you didn't like us.
Right.
I said, right. I didn't realise this was how it was done. So they had a couple of beers together, and everybody was speaking English after a couple of those. And it was a good moment for him to get closer to the staff, because that's part of the challenge. You, as I said earlier, especially for a guy like Arnie, was the bond of the team, which means not just the players but the staff as well, is a big part of how he does things. So, it's many ways a similar club to the Mariners. It's an isolated club in a regional centre with a strong kind of community focus. So if they accept him and he integrates well into the squad, I think definitely he's the right guy to carry that club forward. I just hope that the supporters are patient, and indeed the board is patient. I understand there's a new president taking control soon, so hopefully they also recognise the issues that he's got, and I think he's doing a fantastic job given the struggles that the club does have. I mean, they're not, as they're one of, if not probably the poorest club in the division. So it's hard to attract players, and Arnie's a guy that loves working with young players. So, I know that he's got the Sky Perfect hooked up, and he's watching J2 as many games as he can every week to try and look and identify some young players that could come into the club. So, he's doing the work of five people, really. He didn't sleep much the night before the Corfu match. He was that anxious about things. So, from the outside, it might look like this foreign coach has come in and you're taking the piss a little bit and the results aren't coming, but that couldn't be further from the reality. Him and the staff are working 20-hour days trying to turn things around. It's a slow process. It takes time, and let's wait and see what happens in the second half of the year.
Most definitely. So, Sendai face FC Tokyo in the Nabisco Cup on Wednesday, and then on Sunday evening they travel to Urawa. And you're going to be at that game, I believe, Scott, before you head back to Australia.
Yeah, first J-League match that the fans will be back, or will they be back, for a while. So it should be a fascinating game. And, for Arnie, again, and for Sendai, what better a challenge, really? You're walking into that cauldron, so much expectation from the players and the fans and the club and everything else. And another tactical puzzle. That's the other thing that I think Arnie's finding unusual. There's almost this template 4-2-3-1s that you see in most countries, certainly in Australia it's the case. And here you're coming where you've got a lot of teams that are playing with three defenders or playing with five in transition, odd formations that we see at Urawa and Hiroshima. So all these little tactical puzzles for him to try and figure out.
All right, fantastic stuff. Well, great to catch up with you again, Scott, and enjoy the rest of your time in Japan.
Thanks, Ben.
And the last game to review from J1 Match Day 5 is the clash between Shimizu and FC Tokyo at Nihon Daira. There for us was Barry Valde. He joins me for the first time this season. Barry, how are you?
Been better, but good to be back. Thank you for having me back on.
Oh, always a pleasure. And just so the listeners understand, I haven't ambushed you by having you on after Tokyo have beaten Shimizu. We did tee this up last Friday, right?
That's right. It was agreed. For better or worse, yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, I fully expected to be here with my tail between my legs, especially after the way Tokyo capitulated in the Tamagawa Classico. But, in early doors, Barry, it looked like it was going to be this game was going to run to a similar pattern as Shun Nagasawa fired home a fierce shot in just the fifth minute. And your boys, S-Pulse, definitely had the best of the first half hour or so.
Yeah, it was such an open game. The first half was such a sort of free-flowing end-to-end kind of game. And we did have, there weren't that many sort of clear shots on goals or anything that really troubled the keeper too much. But there were real kind of, there's a lot of movement, a lot of open space, and a lot of opportunities to extend our lead. Although Tokyo did have us down the other end a couple of times, but No, it was a good start. All the more frustrating the way it went.
Yeah, it seemed to me that your left-hand side of fullback Yosuke Kawai and left-sided midfielder Toshiyuki Takagi were getting some joy, especially in that opening 20 minutes or so. They were working very well on the counter-attack.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Kawai generally. He's a classic kind of utility player, can be used quite a few different positions. And yeah, he was doing all right, I thought, as well.
Yeah, a couple of players I was unfamiliar with in your midfield as well, Takeuchi and Musaka, preferred to Muramatsu and Honda, who I'm much more familiar with.
And yeah, to be honest, I would rather see Honda back in. They're both pretty young, and they're both Gottby's been using them more and more. But as starters, to be honest, I would prefer to have Honda in there, especially. Who doesn't seem to start that often, but I'm a bigger fan of him. I think he's a much stronger presence, and he's older, and he's got a better understanding with the likes of like Omaya, I think.
Yeah. So as we mentioned, Shimizu had the best of the first half hour, and to be completely honest, I was pleased to see Tokyo get through that period just a goal behind. And just before half time, the Gasmen equalised through Hiroki Kawano, making his first league start of the season. He fired home across the keeper first time after fellow youngster Yoshinori Muto's shot was parried out by the keeper Masatoshi Kushibiki. And well, the perfect time to score, Barry, and equaliser just before half time for Tokyo.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you could say it all changed on that, I guess. Well, of course, we missed a penalty a few minutes into the second half, another turning point. But no, it was a frustrating goal. It was a kind of a soft goal as well. It was right in front of us, and it kind of trickled past just beyond the Kushibiki's reach. It was a real kind of frustrating goal to concede, and the timing as well.
Yeah,
said right before half time.
And then, 3 minutes or so into the second half, public enemy number one at the Nihon Daira, former S-Pulse left back Kosuke Ota, inadvertently handled a long ball over the top from Calvin Yongapin, and. Yeah, as you mentioned, Genki Omai's penalty was saved down low by Shuichi Gonda, and I guess we'd have to say that was the turning point, Barry.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a great penalty. Like, it was right in front of us, and it was, I mean, if the keeper goes the right way, I mean, penalties are penalties, obviously, but if the keeper goes the right way, they save him, but it wasn't a...
Yeah, not into the corner or anything, was it?
No, it was a very sort of decent position for any keeper. If they happen to go the right way, they've got it.
Mm.
Unlike... Oh my, he doesn't miss many penalties, but that was, again, very frustrating, right in front of us as well.
Yeah, it seemed that Tokyo captain Masato Morishige's protests in delaying the taking of the penalty for a minute or so, I don't know, that might have got into Omai's head. I'm not exactly sure what Morishige was protesting, as I'm sure the referee must have told him that the penalty was given for Ota's handball, but... I guess Morishige might have thought he was getting climbed all over by the Shimizu attacker he was marking, but it dragged on for a good couple of minutes, didn't it?
It did, and I don't know if it would have affected Omai, but I found the game in general was a bit kind of niggly. There was a bit of sort of kind of needle between the whole Ota thing doesn't help. I think him and Omai had a couple of tussles.
Yes, they did, yeah.
Actually, from where I was standing, I thought... incorrectly, I thought Omaya would turn around and thumped him one, but
right.
It was just the angle I was looking at on one occasion when they went head to head. But no, I think the game in general, there was a few just kind of niggly little things going on, and I don't know if it was just a bit of gamesmanship from Morishige trying to, you know, delay. He got a yellow card though, didn't he? I think for
he did indeed, and he's actually suspended for match day 6 because of it. Yeah, he's managed to rack up 4 yellow cards in the first 5 games, so that's not that's not very good going. But, well, there you go. The two Tokyo players we've been talking about, Ota and Morishige, they combined to put Tokyo ahead in the 57th minute when Ota floated in a free kick from the Tokyo right, and Morishige escaped his marker and headed back across Kushibiki, and, well, I guess you probably thought, well, this is definitely not our day after that's gone in, Barry.
Yeah, that was, again, obviously after the missed penalty and then 2-1, and we didn't really ever look like getting back into it after that.
Yeah, Omai was running around a little bit like a headless chook, though, wasn't he, by this point? He was obviously keen to make up for the penalty miss, and He was trying everything. He was clattering into people, and I don't know if it was probably from frustration, but yeah, it just didn't turn out to be his or Shimizu's day. With 8 minutes to go, Tokyo made it 3-1 when young Muto squared across the 18-yard box, and Tokyo midfielder Takuji Yonemoto fired in first time to wrap up the scoring and give Tokyo and their new Italian manager Massimo Ficcadenti his first league win. And our teams switched positions in the table, Barry. From Tokyo went from 16th to 15th, and Shimizu vice versa. For both of us, it hasn't been a good start at all, to put it mildly. I'm quite concerned about my lot. How about you?
Well, it's not been great. I think I remember saying the same thing about this time last year when I was on. It's not been a great start. I mean, we won our first game, which is a very rare occurrence. We won the opening weekend. But then, yeah, I mean, we have had a tough month. That's the thing. Marinos, Cerezo, we lost both of those. Drew away at Reds. And then Saturday's game, of course. But so, I mean, it's been a tough opening month. Some of the better teams there, but it's just been a bit uninspired. I think we just haven't really been looking that impressive. I don't know. I think we will turn it around. I think we'll. I mean, we're 16th in the relegation zone right now, but our next few games coming up, we've got some much easier fixtures on paper. Tokushima Vortis are in there, so have me back on again if we lose that one, and I'll have a few things to say. But
sure, yeah. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about your new forward Milivoje Novakovic, but before I do, you've mentioned the draw with Urawa there. Obviously, the game played behind closed doors. I know you didn't have plans to attend that game anyway, but did you have any contact from any Shimizu supporters, either on Twitter or through your blog, who had planned to go and were then unable to? And what was the reaction in general from the Shimizu supporters to not being able to make the trip to Saitama Stadium?
Well, to answer your first question, yeah, I did have a few of my friends, a few of my group, if you like, who I go with. They were planning on going because several of my friends actually live in Tokyo or Yokohama.
Right.
Although they often travel down for home games, but they're in that area, so they always hit the those kind of games.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they were due to go, and they were very disappointed. A lot of them were very. They understood. And the people I spoke to, they kind of understood why it was, you know, happening. But the general feeling was like sort of disappointment and why us kind of thing. But
right.
it's going to be somebody, right? But it was just, kind of frustration. But I think for the most part, the people I spoke to, they were kind of not, I don't know, I don't want to say behind it, but they were understanding in
right.
In the punishment.
And I know they had a public viewing at Nihon Daira. Do you know how many people rolled up to that?
Well, I would have gone, but my other half she had a day off that day, so I was kind of unable to do anything football related. So
right, I understand what you mean. Yeah,
I did want to go, but I've seen a video on YouTube, and they seem to have a good few hundred in the back stand, the stand you see normally on the TV,
mm-hmm.
And. Even some of the samba band were like behind the goal and playing away during the game.
Oh right, nice.
I couldn't say exactly how many, but there did seem to be a good few hundred there, I'd say.
All right, and so then to Mr. Novakovic, and I guess to a lesser extent, young Yoshiaki Takagi, who's returned to Japan from his stint in Holland. So the two the big name recruits that have come into the club, how have they settled in, and how impressed have you been with them in the early going? I know young Yoshiaki Takagi hasn't, I don't know if he started a game yet, but how's he looked in his cameos off the bench?
He's been alright. They have been just that. He hasn't had many league minutes really. I've always been hoping to see him with his brother both on the pitch, but it tends to be when one comes on, the other goes off fairly soon, so
right, yeah.
It's just the way it is. But I'm pretty sure he started in our Nabisco Cup game.
I see.
Which we won 4-0 mm-hmm. against Sendai the other week. Yeah, he did okay in that game. I thought he was kind of busy, sort of covering a lot of ground. But yeah, I really want to see him with his brother, but that's just the kind of you know, fascination kind of getting the two brothers on there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as for the league, he hasn't had much in the way of real kind of decent pitch time yet. But, Nova though, Novakovic, he's got a couple, but I feel at the moment he's just a bit isolated. He's not been getting much in the way of service, so there's very little he has been able to do. I think as a team, we've been a little bit disjointed, and, so the front line has been a little bit sort of not cut adrift as such, but just hasn't been getting the service. But I think with the goals he has scored, have been a couple of great goals he's scored. So yeah, I think he's doing okay, but, until we get into our stride, it's kind of hard to really say.
And what about his combination work with young Nagasawa? I think he scored two league goals himself now. So, and I know there was a lot of talk in the Tokyo camp, but during the week about facing Shimizu's twin towers. How are they combining, do you think?
Yeah, not too bad. Nagasawa, he was dropped for I think our second league game. He hasn't started every league game, but he's back in again now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was skeptical when they brought him back because, as some listeners will know, he's been on loan for 3 years in J2 at three different teams.
Right.
And I was a little bit like, oh, what are we doing? Kind of bringing him back suddenly. And the first couple of games, I did think he was a little bit sort of running around, not getting much done and not really, creating much. But, well, he scored a couple. And, I mean, once in the air, I mean, he's pretty decent with his head, as you'd hope.
Mm.
Against that same League Cup game against Sendai, him and Nova were both on, I think, for the last 20 minutes. And in that game in particular, they really did team up well. And, I think Nova got two in that game. Like, he only came on for the last sort of 20 minutes. But, they've been doing all right. But like I said, the whole kind of front line has seemed to be a little bit kind of isolated at the moment.
Fair enough then. All right, well, you've got a Nabisco game at home against Gamba Osaka on Wednesday night, I think, Barry, and then you travel to Kofu on Sunday in J1 Match Day 6. So best of luck in both of those games. Thanks for coming on to the podcast again for the first time this season, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Okay, yeah, thanks for having me on, and I'll speak to you again soon then.
Hi, this is Kevin Muscat, manager of Melbourne Victory, and you're listening to J-Talk Podcast.
This midweek, all but two J1 clubs are in action. In two Asian Champions League match day, four games played on Tuesday night, Kawasaki came from behind to beat Western Sydney Wanderers of Australia 2-1 at home, and Hiroshima were robbed in South Korea, with the referee awarding two hugely debatable penalties to FC Seoul right at the death. Takuto Hayashi saved the first, but the second went in as the game ended 2-2. Those results leave Frontale and Wanderers together on 6 points in Group H, a point behind Ulsan of South Korea, while Hiroshima, Seoul and Beijing Guoan of China are all level on 5 points in Group F, a point adrift of leaders Central Coast of Australia. In Wednesday's ACL action, Cerezo Osaka, third in Group E, are away at bottom club Buriram United of Thailand, while it's last chance saloon time for Yokohama, who sit bottom of Group G when they host Melbourne Victory of Australia. And thanks to Victory manager Kevin Muscat for his promo. Also on Wednesday, match day two of the group stage of the Nabisco Cup will be played. We've already mentioned a couple of the Group A fixtures, where Sendai host FC Tokyo and Shimizu host Gamba Osaka. The other game is Kashima hosting Tosu, with Kobe on bye. And in Group B, there's a Saitama derby, Urawa hosting Omiya, Kofu host Kashiwa, and Niigata host Nagoya, with Tokushima on bye. Sunday's J1 Match Day 6 gets underway with three games kicking off at 1 o'clock. Niigata host Yokohama, Nagoya host Hiroshima, and Tokushima, still looking for their first J1 win of course, welcome Kawasaki to the Pocari Sweat Stadium. There's also three games kicking off at 3 o'clock. Omiya host Kobe, Kashiwa host Cerezo Osaka, and Kofu welcome Shimizu to the Yamanashi Bank Stadium. The two games at 4 p.m. are FC Tokyo hosting Tosu and Gamba Osaka entertaining Kashima, while the 7 o'clock game is bound to be a highly charged atmosphere at Saitama Stadium when Urawa host Sendai.
In J2 match day 5 played on Sunday, Shonan emphatically won the clash of the top two in Matsumoto 4-1 to open up a 5-point gap at the top. Other notable results saw Iwata win 2-0 at Tochigi SC and Nagasaki destroyed Tokyo Verde 5-1 at Ajinomoto Stadium as both winners joined Matsumoto on 10 points, while Gunma rose to 5th with a 2-0 home win over Toyama, and Kyoto and Sapporo drew 1-1 at Nishikyo Gyoku to leave them locked together with identical records, though both slipped a spot to 7th. In match day 6 this Saturday, Shonan will look to make it 6 from 6 when they host 18th placed Okayama. Other key games are Sapporo vs. Matsumoto, Iwata vs. Gunma, and Oita vs. Kyoto. And finally, J3 match day 4 was played last Sunday, and Gruja Morioka won the clash of the top two 1-0 over FC Ryukyu down in Okinawa. Machida Zelvia won the Kanto Derby 2-0 at home over SC Sagamihara, and the shock of the round, and probably the entire J-League weekend, was Fujieda My FC's first win of the season, a stunning 4-1 shellacking away at preseason favourites AC Nagano Parcero, with Fujieda forward Sugutoshi Oishi netting all four goals in a remarkable performance in his first start of the season. In match day 5 this Sunday, leaders Morioka face another tough test when they host second-placed Machida, while Nagano will look to bounce back when they visit third-placed Tottori, and it'll be interesting to see what Oishi does for an encore when his My FC side host winless and rock-bottom Fukushima United. And that's it then for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to Angus McLeod, Scott McIntyre and Barry Valder, and to you for listening wherever you are. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.